get this party started, everybody. So midweek Wednesday morning right here with Sports Radio TSN 1200. Glad you're along for this 20th day of October 2021. Gang's all here. JR, Simmer, and Hammer. And it's another cool morning, although not as cool as yesterday. We were at, 3 degrees yesterday at this time. We're at 8 today. But we have an absolutely beautiful day on the way today. Maybe the last super, super nice, warm, sunny day. So get outside and enjoy it. Mostly sunny is the forecast for today. 20 degrees for the high. 20 today. As we mentioned, things are not as nice for the rest of the week. Tomorrow, there's some rain in the forecast. 15 degrees. Friday's high is going to be 7. That's the high temperature on Friday. In fact, the overnight low Friday night into Saturday is -1. And that's the first time I've seen minus on the forecast sheet. That's not good. The weekend, by the way, outlook is, it's okay. 9 on Saturday, 13 on Sunday with some sunshine, a little bit of sunshine for both of the days on the weekend. But today, super nice. Sunny and 20 and 8 degrees right now as we say good morning and hello to Sean Simpson. How are you this morning, Simmer?
Outstanding, Jer. Temperature not bad. One thing I asked myself this morning, if it's cold in the morning, Sean, why do you leave your coat in the car and then have to put your coat on? Now, I don't have very far to walk, but anyways, got her on. Didn't feel that bad. Again, no wind, and you mentioned the 20 degrees. Just going to take it day by day. We're just going to enjoy today and then see what the rest of the week. And I also admit in your voice, you sound excited about bringing the bad weather report right there. Do you feel a bit of that, Hammer? Kind of excited to deliver the minus? Maybe wants to destroy the rest of his tomato plants? Hey?
The tomato. We,
long gone?
The bounty was too big. Well, I brought,
you
I brought
shared
some
your bounty with
yeah, they were
me.
Outstanding, too.
We had too many tomatoes. Yeah. Like, and I love tomatoes.
Yeah.
I've grown to love them. I didn't really like them as a kid, actually. I liked ketchup, but didn't like tomatoes. Never really made sense to me. But regardless, we just ended up with too many.
Okay.
So I actually have not yet to dig everything out. That'll be one of my tasks before everything freezes.
So you were, as the person that really didn't put the garden together, ended up being in charge of both putting it together.
1,000%.
Maintenance.
Watering when necessary.
So who comes up with the master plans to have dogs, to have gardens?
I think you know the answer to that question.
No, I do.
It's now, rhetorical in nature.
Now, is the version of the garden for next year been discussed? Or
we've talked about expanding things, actually.
Oh, nice, nice.
We
That's good.
Very,
idea.
Very happy with what we reaped. We just found we planted. Or my wife and our neighbor, who we share the garden with, went a little overboard on the tomatoes.
If you do where you're planting while you're having red wine, do you end up sprinkling too much of the same thing? You lose track of what seeds were which, hey?
You know what? I didn't actually, they actually planted it, so that that is not red wine, but white wine, and that certainly could be what went on there.
Yeah. Did you just go with tomatoes, or did you go with
some other
stuff?
Was some squash.
Okay.
I brought
a
squash in for you guys.
Oh, no, that was a monster.
We ended up with quite a few squash.
I don't think anybody took it though. I think that just ended up sitting on the table in our little sitting area for quite a while.
Would have made a nice horn of plenty.
Yes.
As a centerpiece of a good horn of plenty.
A nice feature. Nice feature piece.
Yeah, that's true.
Surprised. You said you didn't like squash, right?
No. We don't use it in our house.
Yeah. So we made a squash. We made a couple of squash. Well, I didn't. My wife did. Squash soup.
Yeah.
So that was okay. So it was, listen,
more than happy. That was okay. That was not a resounding.
No, it was good.
That was very
good. No, it was solid.
I want more squash, please.
What I liked is the squash soup. What I don't like is the baked squash. As part of sort of this potpourri in the summer. I just got tired of it.
Yeah.
I find squash somewhat tasteless.
Yeah, I'm not a... I'm trying to even think of... There's certain things, and I'll put kind of the different type of melons. Never been big on that. The fruit type.
Yeah. And as far about the green melon is always the worst, right?
Or even cantaloupe.
Honeydew.
Well, I've never been... And cantaloupe's actually pretty good, but I've just never been into it. Also, from a garden perspective, if I guess I was good to do it, I'd be planting a little tomato. I'm a big cucumber guy. Always love cucumbers.
We had some cukes.
Yeah, I love pickles. Have my entire life. Can you do like a fresh little onion out of the ground? Are they pretty easy
absolutely,
to do?
Absolutely,
That would be nice as well.
We're going to get in some onions.
Are these suggestions for JR Simmer for next year that you're looking to harvest?
Well, no. It's funny what JR said, and it must be our taste buds, but I can remember literally, at least I felt like at a young age, that I was going to get sick at the smell of a cooked turnip, and now I absolutely love it with the way they do it. Anything to do, what's the little round thing that is now very popular to cook up?
A beet?
No. Round and green.
Round and green.
Everybody's using it.
You know those green vegetables, the rare one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The circular one. That's everyone.
Pepper?
No, it's like a little ball there, and they cook. Anyways.
An artichoke?
No, there's all kinds. But my point is there's all kinds of vegetables as a kid that you had that I just remember the smell, just Brussels sprouts, you know, and different things. Like just disgusting. And now you eat them, and you're like, wow, is it
different? People found out how to cook them.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right? And what to pair them with to actually make them edible.
Yeah,
I hated Brussels sprouts as a kid, and now we've come across this great recipe with
pine that your
nuts
wife makes,
everything.
Eh?
Yes,
yeah.
You still don't
like
Brussels sprouts. What you like is the bacon that the Brussels sprouts is cooked in,
and the pine nuts,
and the pine nuts,
and the fact that the Brussels sprouts are broken into tiny little pieces. It seems to be less offensive.
But even broccoli, either cooked or raw, you know, I absolutely love now.
Oh, broccoli's fantastic. Yeah. Nice char too.
Yeah,
nice charred
very
broccoli.
Much so, Hammer. But and you know, God, they've made them into chicken wings or pretend wings, whatever it was. But as I said, there's just a lot of flavors there now that you have much more of an appreciation for. So as far as the veggies in the garden, I'd be open to just about anything. But the three that you mentioned right there, outstanding.
Okay, we'll see what we can do for you next summer.
You're planting, JR, remember, think of Simmer.
What would Simmer
want?
That's what you do when you live in Russia, JR. You get out of Moscow, you go to your dacha, which is pretty funny, because our whole premise of getting out of a city is to go to a cottage, you'd be near the water. The pollution level is so high in the big cities that people go literally to the middle of nowhere, hang out, drink a little vodka, and you tend to your garden. That's kind of way to get out of the city for hundreds of years, but the last 100 years, where just want to go somewhere to hang out, and you just plant and tend to your garden, and probably for a lot of people, obviously that really counts for some of this food supply as well.
There you go. All right. Okay. So. I had begun by talking about the weather. We got into the vegetables. I just wanted to make the
negative
point,
weather.
That yesterday when I arrived home from work, which was early afternoon, it was cloudy and cool, and I was thinking, man, did I ever blow the weather forecast today? Because we had talked about the fact it was going to be a nice day yesterday.
Yeah.
I went for a nap, very quick nap, 27 minutes in total, because I had a golf game at 2 o'clock.
Oh, jeez.
Okay? I wake up, and I'm walking in the golf course. It's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. It was unbelievable how it changed from like 10 degrees and cold with a wind to sunny. And actually, as we were walking around, I was actually kind of hot. I had too much, I had an extra shirt on. So anyway, we don't deal with that today. Today's going to be super nice all day.
Nice.
So enjoy. All right, 6:18. Let's take a break. We'll get to everything that's, we got a ton of stuff to get to. The baseball playoffs, both games yesterday, the NLCS, ALCS, both with fantastic finishes, raging controversy, which is always great when it comes to playoffs. So we'll get into all of that with you. We'll talk some NHL. I'd like to wake up this morning in Montreal, or I guess as a fan of the Habs. Sky is falling radio. Has to be our friends at TSN 690, right? We'll have Tony Marinaro on the show. We'll give him a first opportunity to go off before he does his own show. It's funny, I texted Simmer last night, and when they were down like 4-0 in the second period, I said, Tony Marinaro? Yes.
And he actually, when I texted Tony, he said, ha ha. Like, yeah, I know exactly why you're having me on right now.
Anyway, all that, and the fact that, how about 5,000 empty seats at the Bell Center for that game? That was startling to see. Now, I know that Montreal, you know, traditionally, you know, in the best of times, obviously, sell out pretty much all their games. But there have been the occasion when you see, you know, some empty seats, but not a lot. That was startling to watch last night. When I turned that game on last night, and how many empty seats were in the lower bowl at the Bell Center last night, that was startling and eye-opening, and kind of furthering our discussion from yesterday about attendance, especially in Canada in the early part of the season. So we'll get into all that, but stick with mostly the on-ice stuff, because there were a pile of games around the league last night. As bad as it is in Montreal, how about how good it is in Buffalo right now? Who predicted the team that went to the Stanley Cup final would start at 0-4, and the team everybody picked for dead last or second last, Buffalo, would be at the top of the standings? So we'll get into all the NHL discussion. We'll talk some football with you as well as the Red Blacks get set for their next game against Hamilton. We got some winning for you with our TSN $1,200 minute, our King of the Grill contest. Dave Poulin will join us later on in the show. And as we mentioned, Tony Marinaro from Montreal. So we got lots to get to. We're glad you're with us here on this Wednesday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Act 624 here on this Wednesday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer Dave Poulin after 8. Dave was in Montreal last night to watch that debacle at the Bell Centre as the Sharks demolished the Habs 5-0, and Montreal's off to an 0-4 start. We'll talk more about that game and the rest of the NHL story coming up in just a couple of minutes, but we'll start with the baseball playoffs because we are, midway through the league championship series now, and two unbelievable games last night, both of which were up in the air until the final inning. We'll talk about the Dodgers' big comeback win in just a second, with a late game last night, depending on, well, maybe you stayed up for the entire thing. Maybe you went to bed and said, this is close. I wonder how it all turned out. Well, Boston leads 2-1 into the eighth inning. Jose Altuve gets absolutely booed at Fenway and then proceeds to smoke one over the Green Monster on the first pitch of the eighth inning to tie the game at two. So we'll go to the ninth inning now. And Nathan Eovaldi, who was supposed to start, I believe, today's game, I think, with the Red Sox, they bring him in relief in the ninth inning last night of a tie game. Anyway, at one point, I believe with one runner on, the Astros hitter Castro looks at what appears to be a called strike three, which doesn't end up being a called strike three. It's called a ball by umpire Lance Diaz, keeps the inning alive. Castro singles in the go-ahead run, and from there, the bottom falls out of the Red Sox because they give up seven runs in the top of the ninth inning and end up losing 9-2. To the Red Sox, to the Astros, sorry. Astros beat the Red Sox 9-2. All of the runs scored with two out, and all of them scored after what appears to be a pretty blatant missed third strike call on Castro of the Astros.
Appears to be.
Okay, well,
I already tweeted out the video at TSN 1200. It's quite clear. It's the full ball over the plate, and we're not even talking about height, too. It's right there.
Yeah.
It's right there to be called.
They track these things in Major League Baseball. Probably not the umpires' union. Umpire Lance Diaz missed 21 balls and strikes last night using the technology that they have available, including that one that could have gotten the Red Sox out of the top of the ninth inning unscathed. That's more misses than any umpire has made in a game in the playoffs this year. So that's a huge turning point in that game last night as the Astros come back to win it in the ninth, and they tie the series at 2-2.
Were the Red Sox just that fired up, Jared? Now, I got to say this. I tried to give the baseball a try, and I switched over, said to Maddie, we're going to watch a little bit of baseball here. And I swear I was on it for 10 minutes, and Scherzer threw one pitch, and I just said, you know what, I can't. I got to switch it back over. Obviously, him grabbing his pants and his belt and the batter stepping out and him going back in. Obviously, this is the ninth inning, and I look, and I'm like, it's 8:40, and it's the second inning? Okay, anyways, did the Red Sox just become completely unraveled at this, or was it just, hey, bad luck, bad umping, and why the hell is this guy doing the ALDS?
Well, that's a good question, too, because he was one of the worst umpires during the regular season as well. I think I saw on Twitter bottom 6% for accuracy and bottom 12% for consistency. So I'm really not too sure on why one of your maybe worst umpires, at least with this stat that they hold, is behind home plate for a playoff game.
Isn't that always the case, though? Is it Angel Hernandez that everybody says is the worst umpire in baseball, and yet you always see him in the postseason? It has to be a seniority-based thing.
Yeah. If he's consistently bad for both teams, does that make it a level playing field?
I
mean that sincerely. Like, if you're going against one team, but yeah, it is very, very strange.
No, that's exactly what happens, though. You just unravel, right? You think you're out of the inning, you're ready to move on to the bottom of the ninth, and maybe extra innings, and this blatant strike is called a ball, and that's exactly what can happen to any pitcher. And then now you're going into your pen, and you're rushing, and the Astros have got the heat, and they're going, and they're just socking the ball around Fenway. No, it happens in ball quite quickly.
Well, it raises the whole question of, and I know this is going to be our web poll question today, of, are we at a stage now? Technology has gotten to a stage where if we don't have it already, I believe they're already experimenting with it in the minors. Is it time for the major leagues to go with, for lack of a better term, robot umpires, technology to call balls and strikes? I believe in the minor leagues, they have an umpire there, But he actually, there's just a buzzer that goes off that, and all he does is make the signals and call it a ball or strike.
Where do you sign up for that? Hey, wow. Yeah, so, next thing I said to Hammer, you get rid of the catcher. You just have an automatic machine that gets the ball back to the pitcher quicker so you can speed up the game.
So, and again, it appeared to be a pretty blatant missed strike call last night, which, you know, ultimately may have cost the Red Sox the game. We don't know for sure how it would have turned out. They would have gotten out of the top of the ninth inning, tied at two. Would they have scored a run in the bottom of the ninth or went on to win it in extra innings? That we don't know. We do know that the Astros did take advantage of what appeared to be that error, and they put up the runs, and they've tied the series now 2-2. So what is specifically, Hammer, our question going to be today?
Specifically, it is, what would you like to see MLB use to call balls and strikes? Human umpires, robot umpires, also known as automated strike zones.
Right.
But it's more fun to say human and robots.
Yeah. Interested on that, Jared, because I, again, also understand the tradition of it. Is there some type of way to help the umpire, to aid the umpire, or the minute you introduce that, then you might as well just get rid of him completely, right? Or do you need somebody?
Talking about a chip and a ball or something?
Well, no, yeah. Well, not even chip and a ball. I'm just saying whatever technology they're using, that the umpire has an earpiece. But again, I guess then you're taking him away, but you still kind of want the field general there as the guy, but he has something that's going to help him to make sure that he's comfortable or seeing the ball, or, well, not seeing the ball, but the technology's doing.
Yeah, I think either you're in or you're out with technology. Yeah. I don't think there's any halfway. I don't know what a...
Yeah, you can't have a combination.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like, well, I see a strike, but my little buzzer here says it's a ball. What do I call? Yeah. You're either into the technology 100% or you're not.
Because then you get into instant replay, right? Now you're wondering if you're going to review balls and strikes.
No, that's a good point, but you'd still need an umpire, would you not? Now,
plays at home.
Well, no, but just overall to organize the game. I know it sounds funny, but I'm sure there's a lot more that goes into than just calling balls and strikes, right? Making sure lineups are correct, saying hi to the manager.
Administrating the game for sure. Yeah. And as Hammer said, plays at the plate and all that. You'd need that, but balls and strikes is the... Calling balls and strikes is the biggest thing the home plate umpire does. There's no doubt about that.
No, for sure, for sure.
All right, so where do you guys go? Hammer, I'll start with you. You're the baseball guy. You want to see robot umpires, or are you happy with the humans and dealing with human error? That doesn't appear to be an answer. I'll give an answer first.
Human error is a part of Major League Baseball.
Yes.
Some are a little more grotesque than others, like last night, but it's a part of it. And it's what makes baseball in some instances. So I want to continue having human umpires behind home plate calling balls and strikes.
With no technology.
With no technology.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and we've had this this argument about, and this is not to do with the technology. Like for me, if we equate it to hockey, right, people have said, do we need to get more technology involved in hockey? And I said, other than when the puck goes in the net, I don't want replay for anything. Mm-hmm. Okay. I am willing to deal with the fact that the game is played by humans, and those humans may make tons of mistakes and tons of errors. And that's what leads to often some of the most interesting and unbelievable and spectacular plays that we see is the errors that the humans make. And I am willing to live with the errors that the people that officiate the games make as well. We're talking about this one strike call that was missed last night, for sure. And was it a big moment in the game? Absolutely. But if we go over the entirety of the entire Major League Baseball season and even over the playoffs, how many balls and strikes would be missed percentage-wise of the entire thing? It was just in a huge spot.
Well, I think the bigger error is Major League Baseball having Laz Diaz behind home plate. That's the bigger error in... But that means Major League Baseball has to recognize websites like umpscorecards.com that keeps track of home plate umpires and their consistency and accuracy of calling balls and strikes, and using that into consideration into who's behind home plate for these big games.
So I'm a human umpire guy. Hammer is a human umpire guy. Took you a while to get there.
Yes.
Simmer, you making it three for three or with the robots?
No, I'll go with the robots just to have a little bit of a different opinion. Again, changing up a little bit baseball, and it's also just incredible, JR, trying to equate it, and I know we talk in hockey, you could call a penalty on any play, and basketball and football, same thing. The umpire position and the balls and strikes, I'm trying to equate that to any other sport. It's just so unique and so important at the same time, so bloody difficult. difficult. And do you guys agree? Is that the case of every umpire has a different strike zone? And it's kind of an idea for the pitchers and the catchers to understand that and the hitters.
Yes.
You to feel out and understand what the hell.
All you want is consistency. Yeah. In your refereeing in hockey or football, your umpiring in baseball, if you're going to call the outside strike from the first inning till the ninth inning or the extra innings or whatever. Just be consistent.
That's exactly
it. Be consistently bad. Yeah. Consistently bad if you have to.
And hey, you know what? There is, when you think about baseball, in a big pitch and then seeing the true reaction of the umpires, and I don't know if they're as animated as they used to be, but it's certainly a big part of the experience, right? If it hits the catcher's glove and then just a split second, you're waiting to hear, is that going to be a ball or a strike? You know, how it reacts and how the crowd. So it's certainly a big, big part of the experience. And yeah, so, and I even think back to how animated it was in Naked Gun. You know, you think of that sequence. Still one of my favorites of all time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what a moment that was last night. And again, that will be a huge talking point today. But for the Astros, the team everybody loves today, they took advantage of the missed call. And they go on to win the game and tie the series 2-2. Game 5 goes at Fenway this afternoon at 5 o'clock. And we now know there will be a Game 6 back in Houston coming up on Friday. Meanwhile, the NLCS, that was the early game yesterday. Atlanta up 2-0, going to L.A. They were controlling the game. They're up 5-2 in the bottom of the 8th inning. Cody Bellinger is up for the Dodgers with 2 on.
The pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep right field, that one back, and we are tied! Cody Bellinger dancing around the bases, and this place is going crazy.
Did you say that ball was in his eyes? Was it that high?
I don't think so.
It was a high pitch.
It was elevated.
It was chest level or up.
Yeah, not in his eyes.
Listen, full credit because he, you know, most home runs, right? It's about launch angle and all that other thing. Like to get your bat up that high, and be able to swat that ball out of the park like he did last night, that was impressive from Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, and also impressive, guys. First of all, he's changed his swing. I did a little bit of research on this. Did you also know, as a former MVP, and I do find this cool, guys, because we think about playoffs, and I'll go back to 2017, Bobby Ryan with a little reset, terrible regular season. Cody Bellinger, did you know, as far as former MVPs in Major League Baseball, that he had the lowest batting average in the history of former MVPs at 168, which goes back to the 1940s.
Wow, what great research.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is it not? But my point is...
He had a terrible year
this year. My point is, it's pretty cool, right? You know, that, hey, the guy has realized my season is a hot mess and somehow I'm going to change it around in the playoffs and come up with these big hits. I think that's a really neat thing where, hey, now, do I want you to do more than 168 in the regular season? I hope I have my stat right, Hammer. But I just think that's, say, when an athlete digs down and says, you know what, I'm going to have a reset here for the playoffs and I'm actually going to show up. I think that's pretty inspiring.
Overall, he hasn't even had a great playoff, but he comes up with these great hits. No, but you mentioned it. He comes up with these great hits in later innings. Like, I would love to know, and maybe you can find out, Simmer, because you've got such a great research staff, what his batting average is in the eighth inning and later. Because he's already had you got the game-tying home run. He's had a walk-off. He's been there in the late innings for the Dodgers, and that's what makes the playoffs so magical for these players. It doesn't matter what you do 1-7, but if you can show up in the eighth and the ninth inning, boom, you're a hero.
It was quite a moment last night. So that tied the game at 5, and then Mookie Betts ends up doubling in the go-ahead run later on in the same inning to put the Dodgers up 6-5, and they would hold on from there to win the game 6-5. So they're back in the series now, down 2-1. And for the Atlanta Braves, man... Is it deja vu all over again? Last year in the NLCS, they were up 2-0 on the Dodgers and 3-1, ended up losing in 7 games. Here's manager Brian Snitker on memories of last year.
We're confident. We're, you know, I think our guys, like I said earlier in the day, our guys are every year getting more and more battle tested. And you know, we played a really good game out there today. Like I said, a lot of really good things happened, and we didn't get one pitch back. But I think the guys have a lot of confidence in themselves, and you know, they'll get a good night's sleep, have a nice dinner, and be ready to go tomorrow. And I don't, there won't be no residual effect.
Absolutely.
That guy sounds like
100% lying on that. He went Johnny High Voice right from the start.
Well, he also sounds like if you're going to do Office too, that he'd be the running off. He'd be the guy running it. What an interesting. Who the hell is that guy? He doesn't even sound like a sports guy. Hey? But talk about a calm and easy demeanor there and nice little dinner.
I think we're in a good spot, guys. No problem whatsoever. Nothing to see here.
You know, for a nice steak dinner and we'll be good to go tomorrow.
It did not sound like he believed an absolute word that he was saying.
No, no. I know I have to say this publicly, but man alive, would we ever blow that one? I don't like our chances now.
I'm going out for a nice scotch and a cigar. Yeah. And I'm going to get a good night's sleep and try to forget about it.
All right, so game four in the NLCS will go tonight. So again, they'll reverse the game. So the Red Sox game is the early game at 5 o'clock, and the Dodgers game is the late game at 8 o'clock, which means it'll end at sometime after midnight or something like that. All right, so there's your baseball story. We'll take a break, 6:39 when we come back. We'll get into the hockey, and man alive, what's going on in Montreal? Love to hear from Habs fans this morning. How you feeling about your team? It is just four games to start the season. Yes, it's four losses, but it's only four games. We'll get into some historical perspective on the last time the Habs started this poorly and actually what happened after they lost the fourth game to start the season. It happened 25 years ago. That's the last time Montreal started 0-4. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll flip the Atlantic Division standings upside down like we all expected early in the year. We'd find the Buffalo Sabres would be in first place and undefeated to start the year. Such is the craziness of the early season NHL. So we'll get into all of that discussion when we return here on this Wednesday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
All right, welcome back. 6:44 on this Wednesday morning. Yeah, we got soccer for you tonight. The Atletico FC down to their final two home games, including tonight at 7. AJ Jakubek will have the call here on TSN 1200, immediately following Offside. I wonder if our friend Eric Macromello will have much to say about his Montreal Canadiens. Anyway, that's tonight, 6 o'clock, here on TSN 1200. Speaking of the Habs, off to an 0-3 start. They were home last night to the San Jose Sharks, who were starting a road trip, and you're thinking, all right, here's an opportunity. Take a deep breath after the first week of the season. Get our house back in order. Didn't happen. Jonathan Dolan, the former draft pick of the Ottawa Senators, who was traded for Alex Burrows in 2017, has kind of been in the NHL a tiny bit, been in the minors, went back to Sweden. He's back. Back in the NHL, he's playing for the Sharks. He scores two goals in the first, 4 or 5 minutes of the game to put San Jose up 2-0. This game still, there's nothing wrong with this game, is there?
Nieto out near the blue line, over for Carlson. Puts it through, they score. It's redirected in the slot. It should be Carlson's goal, and it's 3-0 San Jose.
It was Erik Karlsson's goal. He would add two assists. And the Sharks would add two more goals on the night, and you can make the final. San Jose 5, Montreal nothing at the Bell Center. The Habs booed off the ice at the end of the first period, at the end of the second period, at the end of the game.
Getting in their car.
It was ugly with a capital U.
Yeah, and funny, Pooley's doing the broadcast. I don't think he ever played with Ulfie Dolan, but I knew Ulfie, and I think to myself, the circle of life, JR, and if you're Dougie Wilson, when Dougie Wilson played for the Sharks, Ulf Dolan was on the team. And there is Jonathan Dolan, and funny, they also showed in the broadcast, of course, Mr. Burrows is on the bench for Montreal, so a little tie-in there, but interesting how they've circled back. And, hey, we'll see San Jose Thursday, watch most of the game to kind of get a feel, and there's a nice vibe around the team right now. But as far as the Montreal Canadiens, the parallels on and off the ice between Ottawa and 2017, JR, and the feel of that crew and the loss of Deneau and Weber and Price and introduced some great leadership with Hoffman. Devo's coming over and going to put up 80 points. Caulfield's on his way to 50 goals. You're just watching the whole crew last night, and you're like, where do you even start? It is a hot mess of disaster and no vibe, no energy, and unfortunately not a whole lot of try. It really is. You got to be super nervous if you're a Habs fan.
Montreal 0-4 to start the year. They've scored three goals total in those four games. They're 0-13 on the power play. Oh, And you get Jesperi Kotkaniemi and the Carolina Hurricanes coming to town for their next game coming up tomorrow night. So maybe a big rivalry, such as it is. Maybe gets Montreal's fires cooking. The last time the Habs started 0-4 was 25 years ago, 1995-96 season. After the fourth loss to begin the year, Jacques Demers, the head coach, and Serge Savard, the general manager, were fired.
Oh, wow, wow.
4 games into the season. So I don't know that that is going to happen in Montreal. We talked yesterday about Marc Bergevin being in the final year of his contract as general manager and maybe already having eyes on a place like Los Angeles as a place that he's already planning to move to. And is that wise, having a lame duck general manager? But we know that Dominique Ducharme just got a 3-year extension after leading the team to the final last year. He's not getting fired after 4 games, so I don't think you're going to be you're going to find any immediacy in that. Is it too early to be talking about a trade of some sort?
You know what, Jerry? I don't even know how many more trades you can make, right? But now you're always looking, you're always trying. Do you introduce as Hoffman has hopped in? But realistically, after making the Dvorak trade for the first round pick, you sign Savard, and this is also one of the parts and the issues you run into. Let's remember that Savard was a third pairing defenseman that doesn't skate very well for Tampa Bay when they won the Cup. Any idea that he was going to hop in for Shea Weber, and at the same time, it's a back end that lacked foot speed, so you put that replacement, not to mention, of course, the leadership of your captain. You also make, and I don't know Dvorak well enough, and I'm not going to even make I'm not going to say anything now on him. Everybody I talked to said he was a third line center. Had a real nice preseason. Hasn't happened. Duran's back in the lineup, which is a great story, but wasn't part of you going to the finals last year. Now introduce Mr. Hoffman. I'm not a Toffoli guy. We'll see how the season goes. Just kind of go up and down the lineup, and I know it's easy, Jer, when they're 0-4. And hey, quite simply, we've discussed this. Mr. Allen is not the same human being when he is all of a sudden a starting goaltender. His energy, as we often talked about Matt Murray last year, you don't feel any confidence. So you check lots of different boxes there. A little bit of a hangover, the whole manager thing. I don't know if old Biceps Bergie's actually working out at Gold's Gym in LA right now and actually not in Montreal, but it is a real, and again, I know teams get off to slow starts, but you can't watch that and not be nervous because there's something really feels wrong under the hood right now.
Yeah. In your time in either Washington or Toronto, did you have a team that ever started?
In Washington, we always started slow because it was also in the market. There was no feel. Like, you're always worried. It's all about the former Redskins football team. It was so anonymous. You're so nervous. And at the same time, Jared, it was so different then. And we'll introduce. I don't know. I haven't looked all around. I saw some pictures out of Detroit yesterday. It looked like friends and family. A lot of teams in the United States, I don't think necessarily are selling out. We'll talk about in Canada. But what we really worried about was at that time, you had to sell tickets to make revenue to pay your players. And so you were so much more nervous and you're figuring out, how do you make a trade? And what do you do to try to kind of spark things? And, you know, it's very difficult. But from Montreal perspective, you go through that lineup, they don't have much internal. You know, they brought in so many players. They made lots of good trades. But I don't know. I find it hard to believe there's much they could do at this point to make any more trades to turn it around.
So in a tip, no, my question, though, is in a typical NHL front office, you've lost 4 games to start your season.
Yeah.
How panicky are they?
Oh, you would be. Now, for Bergevin, how you feel?
It's 4 games out of 82.
Well, but this would be also, though, and there's no doubt ownership would quickly look at the bottom line of there's 5,000 empty seats, JR, and there's negativity in the market. That market is very temperamental to that. Oh, I don't think this would be the case of, hey, you're going to go out and make some foolish trade. But do I also think they're a little bit nervous right now based on everything that's going on with the franchise? Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting you brought up the historical perspective of Ottawa in 2017, the year they made the long run and got within a goal of going to the Stanley Cup final. Montreal made it to the final. And then the next year, right, Ottawa starts okay. They go to Sweden. They make the Matt Duchene trade. And then the season just falls into just a roasting pit of hell.
Little abyss.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you also had the summer. We had the whole situation with Phaneuf, right? Mathot ends up going. Right. Didn't we all of a sudden on the eve of training camp find out MacArthur decided to retire again? You just had these all little stories kind of, you know, and with Montreal, like I said, you kind of look at it. And as I said, you bring back the existing parts from last year. You still recognize, Jared, that was the 18th best team in the National Hockey League. But when you also look at the parts that have been taken out, the overall feel of it, and like I said, what do I like? look at? I look at a slow blue line. I look at a guy like Romanov, who's probably been a tad overrated in the sense of he's a good young player. He's got a ways to go. And then I think they've transitioned to being really small up front again, JR. They're kind of, once again, that team that is not very good on faceoffs and I think fairly easy to play against.
It is getting late early in Montreal, I think is the way the saying goes. They are the only team in the National Hockey League at this point that does not have a point to them. So there we go. So things are not good in Montreal. We'll talk to Tony Marinaro from TSN 690 coming up a little later on in the show. So as bad as things are in Montreal, how about what's going on in Buffalo right now? Sabres were 2-0. Craig Anderson is in the net. 41-year-old Craig Anderson. Stopping pucks. Last night they're behind against Vancouver. They tie the game at two and then...
In the corner. Protects the puck. Back to Miller. Miller shot. Deflects. Pass it. Rebound. Backhand scores! Sabres take the lead. And that smile from Jeff Skinner tells it all.
Yeah. Hasn't been much to smile about for Jeff Skinner for several years, except when he goes to check out his bank account online. That's always a cause for happiness.
Oh, it is.
But what a game-winning goal he got last night, and the Sabres go on to beat Vancouver 5-2. So Montreal is 0-4. They're at the bottom of the Atlantic Division. And you got the Buffalo Sabres tied with Florida at the top at 3-0. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Happy for Donnie Granato. Try to get Donnie on while things are still going well. and I've got to think, Jared, they're not. It's not sustainable. It's not a very good hockey team. But I'm assuming not having Eichel around or not talking about it. But, hey, this is what happens, I guess, when there's just such low expectations. And assumption is a lot of teams are coming in and thinking they're playing the American Hockey League team and probably taking them a tad lightly, but she's early.
Yeah. Announced attendance last night at the KeyBank Center in Buffalo, 7,376.
Pretty much the same they draw for the Amherst.
Like that's
on the road for their farm team.
Buffalo is just, you know, it's an incredible hockey market, but you talk about a beaten down hockey market.
Yeah.
They've just had enough.
Well, so. And as I said, I don't think there was much of a crowd in Detroit, JR, and goes back.
To announced at 14,000.
Oh, okay.
I kind of went through all the attendance figures last night, so trying to get a gauge on Edmonton last night. So the Oilers are off to a good start. They won again last night, 3-0. 14,000 in Edmonton. I think a sellout at that rink is, I believe, above 17.
Yeah.
So, but again, they've had three home games. This is the other thing you talk about a lot. Even in Canada, when you have a lot of home games early in your season, you know, people are out, as we discussed, people are out of the habit of going to games. There is still some hesitancy from some people of being in big crowds. All of these are factors within why I think we've seen attendance, particularly in the Canadian markets, not as good as we thought it typically would be. So it'd be interesting to see what Vancouver is yet to play a home game. Yeah. Winnipeg apparently is a bunch of empty seats for their next game at this point. We've discussed Ottawa right now. Montreal, 5,000 empty seats. Toronto's played three home games. They haven't sold out one yet.
Yeah. So. Well, and again, hey, I think just for a lot of people, JR, are looking at the bottom line. There's just lots of factors going on right now. And not to mention, each of these sports franchises has almost had to restart their business. And whatever announced attendance is, first of all, it's not always necessarily accurate, depending on how many you pay for, how many you give away. But for any team, it's all about the bottom sheet. Like, what are your tickets paying for? You know, you go to Tampa back in the days you went, JR. I could sell out the building and people are paying $5 to get in. Hey, what is your revenue? Like, what kind of dough are you actually bringing in on a gate on a nightly basis? That's what the NHL issues to all the teams. And for the 32 teams, that's what really matters at the end of the day. Hey, what kind of dough am I bringing in? Not necessarily how many bums are in the seats.
The Pittsburgh Penguins played the Dallas Stars last night. And for the first time since, let me just find the date here, February 14th, 2007, Valentine's Day. The Pittsburgh Penguins did not sell out their game last night. A streak of 633 consecutive home sellouts for the Pittsburgh Penguins ended last night as they were about 1,500 short of a sellout in Pittsburgh. As we said, the streak began back in 2007. That'd be, you know, you're talking about the infancy of Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin being part of the team and the Penguins just starting to get good. They have sold out every home game since then. until last night.
Yeah, and that goes also in again, Jer. I've mentioned that market, and I know the markets in the U.S. fairly well. Pretty good spot. It was only 2 to 3 years previous to that that Mario was trying to sell it to Kansas City. It is not a big place. When you go there, it's all about the Steelers. The Pirates, depending on how they're doing, don't register the same, but they have been extremely spoiled based on the Mario era, and then all of a sudden when the bottom fell out once again, basically into bankruptcy, Sid comes along and has saved the day ever since. But it looks like for the franchise is that, and for lots of different reasons, yeah, it's going to be a lot of work ahead for the Pittsburgh Penguins to figure out how do you navigate the post-Sidney Crosby era.
All right, a couple other things. Mentioned Edmonton won their game last night over Anaheim 6-5. Dreisaitl 2-2. McDavid 1-2. So the big boys continuing to lead the way. Mike Smith left the game, precautionary apparently. So Koskinen ended up getting the win in the Oiler net in that one. The other Canadian team to play last night was Winnipeg. It looked like they'd won the game. They were up on Minnesota 5-3 at one point, and here's what we thought. And quite frankly, when I shut my my app off that had the scores on, I thought, oh, Winnipeg won that game. Apparently not.
Picked off. Jets will get it to center. Remember, an empty net. Kopp getting it over to Scheifele. Scheifele shoots and scores. Scheifele puts it into the empty net.
After reviewing the play, it was determined that it was offside. No goal.
No goal. So scratch that 6-4 lead for Winnipeg.
Yeah, and so it's still 5-4. Well, Minnesota ends up tying it in the final minute, and then they win it in overtime. Joel Eriksson Ek completes the hat trick in the big comeback win for Minnesota. 6-5, they beat Winnipeg last night on a game that everybody had thought they had lost. But an offside review on an empty net goal, of all things, leads eventually to the comeback by the Wild.
Yeah, and pretty cool to hear Vin Scully's son doing the games right there. And talk about comeback players. This Eriksson Ek, and I know Pierre McGuire talked about him last year, JR. I thought just on the trash heap, so much talk in Minnesota when they passed on Brock Besser, who's a native of Minnesota, drafted him, and just thought he was an absolute bust in the National Hockey League, but he's following up on what was a very, very good year last year.
Yeah, ended up getting a long-term contract,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Good player. All right, so that wraps up the NHL. Tons of games last night. We'll get into all of it with Dave Poulin when he joins us, but a lot of, because Dave was at the game last night at the Bell Center. We'll center on the Habs and, of course, talk some Sens as well. After our top-of-the-hour news and sports update, we'll get into some Sens talk as they got back to practice yesterday. We'll get you a health update on Matt Murray. Also, where's Timmy Stützle going to land in the lineup now that Brady Tkachuk is back? So we'll hear from the important people regarding all of that when we return. We'll have some winning for you next hour as well. Don't forget, speaking of the Sens, we're going to have a pair of 100-level seats to give away to every single home game all season long, starting with tomorrow night's game against Erik Karlsson and the Sharks. The return of Brady Tkachuk, we'll have a pair of 100-level seats to give away to that game coming up later on in the show. We'll have our King of the Grill contest, our $1,000 minute. Lots of reasons for you to stay tuned. We're glad you're with us here on a Wednesday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.